I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. Baltimore has a new mayor. At this hour, Catherine Pugh officially takes the reins as our 50th chief executive. What can she do to make Baltimore safer and more prosperous, and how can she make a difference in the lives of the many people who've been left behind because of racial, social, and economic inequality? And what will the legacy of Stephanie Rawlings Blake be as she exits the political stage? I'm joined by three longtime trenchant observers of Charm City. Bishop Douglas Miles is the co-chair emeritus of BUILD, Baltimoreans United in Leadership Development. Jean Marbella is a reporter and former columnist for the Baltimore Sun. Andy Green is the editorial page editor of the Sun. A look back at the Rawlings-Blake years and a look ahead as Baltimore enters the era of Catherine Pugh. Midday starts right after the news. And welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Tom Hall on this rainy inauguration day. Just minutes ago, Catherine Pugh took the oath of office as Baltimore's 50th mayor. While parts of the city are still reeling from years of neglect and the cataclysmic violence that followed the death of Freddie Gray, gleaming office towers, hip new shopping areas, and new places for artists to live and work also dot the landscape of Charm City, a place that many see as both deeply flawed and pleasantly funky. But what will the legacy of now former Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake be, and what are the big challenges facing Catherine Pugh as she navigates the often competing interests of what people call the two Baltimores, one comfortable and hopeful, the other mired in generational despair? Three longtime and trenchant observers of Charm City join me today. Bishop Douglas Miles is a lifelong resident of Baltimore and co-chair emeritus of Baltimoreans United in Leadership Development, known as BUILD, and he's also the pastor of Koinonia Baptist Church. Bishop Miles, it's an honor. Good to see you, sir.
My pleasure to be here.
Andy Green is the opinion editor for the Baltimore Sun. He was the city state editor before coming to the editorial board, and prior to that, he covered the State House and Baltimore County government. An honor to see you as well, sir.
Great to be here.
Jean Marbella is a reporter on the Baltimore Sun's investigative and enterprise team. She joined the Sun in 1987. She's been a health reporter, a feature writer, a national correspondent, an editor, and a Metro columnist. Jean, it's good to see you.
I feel very tired.
It's like a Trivial Pursuit question. Name three jobs in journalism that Jean Marbella has not had. Very good. You are welcome to join us on this conversation about the legacy of Stephanie Rawlings Blake and the opportunities presented to our new mayor, Catherine Pugh. Our phone number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle, @midday. Tom Hall. So Bishop Miles, as we speak, now Mayor Pugh is giving her inauguration address down at the War Memorial building across the way from City Hall Plaza. Because of the weather, they couldn't do it outside. When we are able to see a tape or read a transcript of what she said, what are you hoping to hear from the new mayor?
I'm hoping to hear that the new mayor will spend as much time focused on downtown, bringing that same kind of interest uptown to neighborhoods. And from what I've heard so far, that's a part of what her agenda will be. I want to hear her say that she's going to push for the consent decree and do something dramatic in reforming the police department in Baltimore City. And thirdly, that she will push for not just for employment, but in preparing the Baltimore workforce for employment that's coming down the pike in the future.
Jean Marbella, you have covered a lot of mayors over a lot of years.
Going back to Mayor Schmoke, I think.
Yeah, Mayor Schmoke, who is serving as the MC today at the inauguration of Mayor Pugh. What do you think makes a good mayor? And how do you think Catherine Pugh, what do you give the chances of Catherine Pugh being one of those mayors that's thought of in the upper echelons of mayors the way some are? I mean, perhaps Don Schaefer and the types who seem to be, history has judged as particularly successful.
You know, I think in a big city, people get used to a certain kind of mayor. They want a mayor who's out there and who is a big personality. And I think Catherine Pugh has an opportunity in that area that Stephanie Rawlings Blake might not have because of her sort of recessive, aloof kind of personality. And I think, during the Freddie Gray riots, I remember Catherine Pugh was out on the streets every night, it seemed like. And you only saw Mayor Rawlings Blake in the command center or once. I think she went out to the big fire on the east side. But you didn't see her physically on the streets. And I think that means something to people. You know, it's not just a style point. It really says something about your leadership and how you feel about the city and how you're going to fight for it.
So, Andy Green, I mean, former Mayor Rawlings Blake would say that she was getting business done. She was in meetings. She was talking to the police. She was coordinating efforts. She was at some point on the phone with the governor, although it came out later that, you know, perhaps they didn't have a phone conversation as quickly as others, you know, would have hoped. What do you make of that leadership style of Stephanie Rawlings Blake? You know, is it sort of fundamentally based in her personality, which is kind of shy? I mean, she's not a people person.
You know, it's interesting considering her dad was a very, very well-known, very respected politician. She grew up in a political household. That has never really seemed a natural role for her. She was sort of going into the family business or seemed to kind of fall into it. She was elected to the city council when she was very young.
Youngest member ever. I mean, even with the young crop that was just got elected last month, she was 25 years old when she was.
But she never, you know, I think Gene is right. She was never really kind of a political animal comfortable in the crowd in the way that people in Baltimore, at least, I think, expect their mayors to be, probably as a legacy of Schaefer to a great degree. You know, we got used to having this kind of outsized personality, and Stephanie Rawlings Blake wasn't that. Catherine Pugh is not exactly that either. She's not, you know, kind of big and loud. She's not a backslapper. She's more of a shoulder squeezer. She'll kind of bring you in and talk to you in a more kind of intimate one-on-one way. And I think people respond to that well, too. You know, if you talk to her, you know, or see her out and about, she's getting up close to people, you know, touching people literally and figuratively. And what I think is great about her is the extent to which she's able to do that and comfortable doing that kind of across the city. Whether it's, you know, uptown or downtown, as Bishop Miles would say, I think she's equally comfortable crossing those lines. And that is what I think gives her the most potential at this particular moment.
Andy Green is the editorial page editor for the Baltimore Sun. Gene Marbella, a longtime reporter and columnist, and Bishop Douglas Miles here is here as well. He's a co-chair emeritus of BUILD, Baltimoreans United in Leadership Development. We're talking about Stephanie Rawlings Blake and Catherine Pugh, the outgoing and incoming mayor of the city of Baltimore. Our phone number, 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Bishop Miles, what do you make of Catherine Pugh's ability to reach across racial lines? In the election, she placed either first or second in every councilmanic district.
Every precinct, actually.
Thank you, Andy, in the city. So there were black districts that Sheila Dixon did better, but even in those districts in which Mayor Pugh didn't win, she was second. And she placed first in many, if not all, of the largely white districts. What do you think about this, the hope that people have that she can be the person to bridge racial divides?
I think the Freddie Gray incident was a prize, I hate to use that word, dropped in her lap, where, again, she was able to be perceived as a person who could cross lines, and it raised her profile. I think prior to that, going into the election, I was almost certain that Sheila Dixon would win. But with the Freddie Gray incident and with the lack of the mayor's presence, I agree, I think the mayor blew it with the lack of her presence in the street. But that's just not who she is. And I always try to equate things on the biblical basis. Isaac was never rose to the stature of his father Abraham. And that, I think, is the legacy
And we should say that the bar set by Pete Rawlings is pretty high. And he was universally admired. Right.
And of course, he was also in a very different job.
Different job. And but I'm even talking before she mm-hmm. entered the mayorship. That's just not who she is. She's not an extraordinarily relational person in terms of being able to touch people's hearts. And on a larger scale, I think that's the problem with the Democratic Party at this point, that it doesn't have very many people who can really relate to people in the streets. I think that that's what killed Hillary Clinton, her inability to relate to what people term the common man. And I think that that was her undoing as well.
And Gene Marbella, I mean, of the accomplishments that the mayor counts, they she sent out a thing just the other day, a big long thing. I mean, it's 45 pages long or something. Of all,
I guess we know what she's been up to for the last few months.
Right, exactly. But you know, so she is proud of the work that she's accomplished. But it strikes me that the things that she lists are very much sort of back office things. It's not to say that they're not important. They are, in fact, important, not the least of which is the bond rating for the city of Baltimore, which is now a AA bond rating, first the highest bond rating in many, many years. She inherited a very troubled city when she took office in February of 2010, coming after Sheila Dixon in this traumatic, draining trial and conviction and, you know, forced out of office. Do you think that, you know, at some point she's going to, Stephanie Rawlings Blake's going to get credit for sort of calming the waters at a very turbulent time and fixing some sort of basic structural things about the government?
You know, I think in policy wonk circles, you know, like the Conference of Mayors or groups like that, I think she will be judged kindly. And it always struck me, speaking to her over the course of her tenure, that she was very, she loved being part of that Council of Mayors, you know, and that seemed much more her natural venue than, you know, the streets of Baltimore. And, you know, the thing is, though, you don't get to choose the situation you run. Like, I'm thinking of George W. Bush coming into office and saying he was going to be a compassionate conservative. He was going to focus on domestic relations, let the rest of the world take care of itself. And then 9/11 happened. And so suddenly we're involved in two wars. And, you know, to a smaller extent, I think that happened to Mayor Rawlings Blake. I think she came in, you know, I'm going to be a fiscally responsible, you know, good government type of mayor. And then it didn't quite work out that way.
Yeah, I think the sort of the highlight moment for Stephanie Rawlings Blake was when she unveiled this 10-year fiscal plan. I was like, you know, Plan to Grow, I think is what it was called. And it was this big thing at the Walters, and Freeman Hrabowski was MC, and it was all this very sort of glitzy presentation. But what it was about really was nitty-gritty stuff like pension reform, getting healthcare costs for municipal workers under control, diversifying revenue streams to reduce reliance on property taxes, you know, if you're still awake, you know, good. But these are important kinds of things that she really kind of relished dealing with, this boring minutiae, and often seemed to like it even more when it was hard to accomplish, like when you're dealing with the police and fire unions in a dispute over this pension benefit that Schaefer foolishly enacted in 1983. And she loved that kind of stuff. But, you know, I think the point of, you know, whether the average person in Baltimore is really going to ever look back fondly on that, you know, I don't think so, because you don't really see it. You don't understand it. You know, there are a lot of ways in which Catherine Pugh is inheriting a better situation despite the unrest of a year and a half ago, because the city's finances are in better order. You know, the property tax is down fairly substantially from where it was when Rawlings Blake came into office. These pension things are
structural deficit, $750 million. I mean, she cut it in half.
There are more people working in Baltimore today than at any point since 1997. You know, that's great. But do people notice that? Do people see that? Or is she going to be remembered as the mayor who wasn't there on the night of the riots and who gave us all free trash cans?
Interesting. But we're going to take a little bit of a break. But before we do, I want to go to Kenny Burns, WYPR's Metro reporter. He is down at the inauguration. Kenny, give us the scene there as we speak.
Well, Tom, the scene is definitely festive. And people are now making their way to the luncheon part of the festivities. Mayor Pugh spoke for, well, now Mayor Pugh spoke for about 10 minutes. She reiterated her campaign platform to do more in the neighborhoods, not just downtown. She gave a number of shout-outs to Morgan State University. And she told everybody she was a cheerleader for Morgan State when she was a Bear, and said that she's going to be the biggest cheerleader this city has ever seen. She also says she's grateful for the team that she assembled so far. She did that. She made those announcements yesterday with former Baltimore County Executive and Maryland Transportation Secretary Jim Smith being on her team, along with another number of other people. She talked about her roots growing up in Philadelphia, and that her father told her that she could do anything she wants. She just had to work a little bit hard. But she spoke. She said she was going to keep it short because she's doing a neighborhood tour this afternoon for communities in the city, kind of a way to spend time with them and celebrate the day that the 50th mayor of Baltimore, Catherine Elizabeth Pugh, was inaugurated here at the War Memorial Building.
All right. Well, Kenny, thank you for that update. We look forward to your reports later this afternoon. So, Bishop Miles, I mean, it sounds like she did strike some of the tones that you just mentioned here a few minutes ago. And she is, in fact, extending her inauguration, if you will, to various neighborhoods. It's not just the $100 a ticket deal tonight downtown, but she's going to be stopping by various neighborhoods during the afternoon today.
I think that's strategic politically. But the rubber will meet the road when policy makes it to the neighborhoods.
Indeed. We're going to talk a little bit about what those policies might entail. That's Bishop Douglas Miles. He's the pastor of Koinonia Baptist Church and the co-chair emeritus of BUILD. Jean Marbella is here as well. She reports on the investigative and enterprise team of the Baltimore Sun. Andy Green is here. He is the Sun's editorial page editor. You are welcome to join us here on Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wypr.org. Send us a tweet at Midday, Tom Hall. I'm glad you're with us. Stick around.
You're listening to Midday here on your public radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back to Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow, the life and music of Cole Porter. Susan Forsher Weiss is a musicologist on the faculty of the Peabody Institute, and she's one of the editors of a new collection of essays about the iconic American tunesmith. We'll also be joined by two terrific musicians who are going to perform some of Cole Porter's classic songs for us right here in Studio A, the vocalist Melissa Wimbish and the guitarist Michael Joseph Harris. So lots of great music coming up tomorrow on Midday. By the way, speaking of music, I hope you can join us tonight here on WYPR for Christmas with Choral Arts. Some of you may know that in my other life, I'm the music director of the Baltimore Choral Arts Society. We do an annual concert of seasonal music at the Baltimore Basilica that is always broadcast live here on 88.1. It starts at 7:30 tonight. Andy Beanstock will host the broadcast, and I hope you can join us. If you're just joining us today, we're talking about the legacy of former Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake and looking ahead to the era of Catherine Pugh, who as of now and just about an hour ago has been installed as Baltimore's 50th mayor. My guests are Jean Marbella, an investigative reporter for the Baltimore Sun, Bishop Douglas Miles, the co-chair emeritus of BUILD and the pastor of Koinonia Baptist Church, and Andy Green, who edits the opinion page at the Sun. Our phone number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Is it, now Andy, let me pose this to you and maybe we can go around the table. Is it really a matter of sort of political personality with Stephanie Rawlings Blake that ended up being her downfall? I mean, she did accomplish a lot of things. I mean, we could make a little fun of the trash cans, but for example, I live in Reservoir Hill. I've lived there for 30 years and our alley has almost no rats anymore. And they used to have, every night when I would come home and pull into my garage, four or five of them would go across the thing. And the trash cans helped. I mean, yeah. Sheila Dixon's recycling program helped. But the trash cans help our neighborhood. The alley is swept. I mean, they're sort of do-it-now citizen service things that have taken place under the Rawlings Blake administration. It's interesting that, you know, perhaps people will all of that be overshadowed by this notion that she's an aloof person.
Well, I think that Gina is exactly right to talk about the circumstances in which you govern govern are things that you can't control. That the aloofness or distance or detachment, you know, whatever word you want to use, has been there from the very beginning. You know, you remember in the beginning there was the "Don't Call Me Stephanie" episode. There was at some public meeting, and a resident referred to her by her first name as someone would, you know, if someone had called Sheila Dixon Sheila, you know, everybody would have been cool, no problems. And she kind of snapped at this person. And that, it seemed, at the time, seemed like an odd little blip. But then, you know, you see this kind of distance or detachment or arm's length kind of thing with her going over the years, like with her long feud with Joan Pratt about the city phone system. When Pratt got sort of annoyed that the mayor was just sort of sitting, sipping her Starbucks at the Board of Estimates meeting while Pratt was complaining about all of this. And then you get to the night of the riots when suddenly it's really important to have that kind of close up personal connection, and you know, the personality outs in the end. It's just the, in different circumstances, it might never have been so crucial, but as fate would have it, it was.
Bishop Miles, the riots are 18 months behind us. Those 18 months, you know, Mayor Rawlings Blake has been in office. What's your take on the efficacy of her efforts to use this moment? As you say, it was a gift sort of put in her lap, to use this moment to really push for and achieve some real systemic palpable change. How has she used this last year and a half of her term?
How did Stephanie use it?
Yeah.
I think she blew it, and largely by not being intimate, number one, not being intimately involved in the One Baltimore effort, and finding that as a platform to lift her profile and her sense of engagement. I think that her insistence on focusing outside of Baltimore rather than in Baltimore for the last year and a half of her term, even though she said that she wasn't running so that she could do that, the perception was she had left office.
Checked out.
You know, a year and a half ago. And
She said she wasn't running because she didn't want her candidacy as mayor to be a distraction from the hard work she needed to do to fix Baltimore before she left office.
Right, and I don't want to appear as a Rawlings basher, Stephanie Rawlings Blake basher, because I'm not that. It was my hope that she would have been a successful mayor. We never benefit. Neither part of the city benefits when a mayor is not successful. My dismay is that, again, she just did not get it in terms of the necessity to relate to people.
Gene Marbella, we've had the last three mayors have been strong, politically experienced African-American women. Sheila Dixon, Stephanie Rawlings Blake, and now Catherine Pugh. What do you see as the big style differences? Not just style differences, but where do you think, in terms of the wonky stuff, the policy proclivities of Catherine Pugh, where do you see those in contrast to a Dixon or a Rawlings Blake?
When I think of Catherine Pugh, I think of her in the context of state government, you know, because that's where she's been the last several years. And she strikes me as quite savvy in the ways of Annapolis. And when you look at, you know, who's on her team now, or who's been announced to date, you know, she's got some very interesting picks. You know, Jim Smith, I think, is very well respected, having been the Baltimore County executive. He's been a judge. Tisha Edwards, mm-hmm. who was, I believe, the chief of staff under Alonzo, the CEO.
And interim CEO herself.
Yeah, she's known as, you know, a pretty tough as nails, you know, gets things done kind of person. And I think her relationship with Hogan is quite friendly and quite deep. You know, I think they've
worked
together.
People have made notice of the fact that right. the governor spoke at the inauguration right. today. He's at lunch mm-hmm. as we speak, and that was considered to be a big turn in direction.
Right.
His relationship with Mayor Rawlings Blake has never...
Frosty.
Yeah.
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 And I think that's important because, I mean, yeah, I don't think having a personal relationship means Hogan would have given us the red line, for example. But I think, you never know. I mean, I think maybe Catherine Pugh, that wouldn't have taken her quite so by surprise. You know, I think she would have been talking behind the scenes and...
Or maybe developing a plan B.
Right.
You know, something like that. You know, I think Catherine Pugh, what's interesting about her is not so much where her policy proclivities lie, but I think in her instinct to collaborate, to bring people together. You know, if you listen to her on the campaign trail, she didn't talk that much about what bills she had passed, although she has passed many, many bills in the legislature and the city council. She talked about how she brought people together around creating the marathon or the Fish Out of Water Project or the design school. You know, she's the kind of person who can kind of cajole, persuade, convince, enlist people into a cause and get it done. And I think that's a really promising model for a mayor in Baltimore, that there's a lot of room to do that kind of thing and in this particular job, and it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
It's midday here on 88.1 WIPR. I'm Tom Hall. You can join our conversation with Andy Green of the Baltimore Sun, Gene Marbella of the Baltimore Sun, and Bishop Douglas Miles, the co-chair emeritus of BUILD, Baltimoreans United in Leadership Development. Our phone number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Bishop Miles, do you think it's perhaps an honest mistake, as it were, that Stephanie Rawlings Blake chose some projects that didn't fly? I mean, Catherine Pugh has the marathon, which is now in its 20-somethingth year, I think, and it's considered to be a very big success. And Stephanie Rawlings Blake tried a Grand Prix auto race that fizzled pretty quickly after it started.
Again, I think it's somewhat symptomatic or emblematic of where the Democratic Party is at this time, focusing on what I call boutique issues rather than nuts and bolts issues that affect people on the ground. The Grand Prix became a joke the moment it was announced. I mean, all of it was just a joke. We're going to have racing downtown.
And that's going to be a game changer.
It's going to be a game changer. Yeah. It's going to change the economy. We're going to make Labor Day weekend just this spectacular time and all. And I think that's where I don't think she was well served in many instances by the people she placed around her. And I think they insulated her from real public opinion rather than whispering in her ear, Madam Mayor, this isn't going to work.
So let's talk about some of the people. Gene, you alluded to some of the picks that Senator, now Mayor Pugh, I've got to get used to saying Mayor Pugh, is kind of like I have to get used to saying President-elect Trump. But as Chief of Staff, she's named Tisha Edwards. She was, of course, many people will remember that she was the interim CEO of the school system before
Gregory Thornton
was chosen as the head of that organization, and of course he's now been replaced. But so Tisha Edwards, what do we know about her? Is she the kind of person that Bishop Miles is alluding to, who can say, you know, Madam Mayor, it's a rotten idea you just told me, and you know, somebody who can stand up and say, don't do that?
Yeah, hopefully she will be, because I think that I agree with Bishop Miles. The City Hall staff under Mayor Rawlings Blake administration was not as, you know, you think of the people that came out of, say, Sheila Dixon's administration, and they were definitely, there were some stars there. Mm-hmm. Andy Frank, who's now a top official at Hopkins. Fred Bielfeld, and some people, you know, who people might not know their names, but they were, you know, well regarded in their in their circles. And I think early on in the Mayor Rawlings Blake's administration, there was a real revolving door. She went through three or four chiefs of staff, and there were all these reports of just kind of turmoil within, you know,
four
different
chiefs
offices.
Of staff, three police commissioners,
right.
Three directors of technology, you know, and a partridge and a pear tree. I mean,
and that says something.
It's tough.
Know,
it does
how
say
do you,
something.
Yeah. How do you run a city when, you know, the players keep
right.
changing?
Whereas Catherine Pugh, she's not hiring her buddies. These are not folks she went to school with. You know, as you say, Tisha Edwards, impeccably qualified. Pete Hammond, one we haven't mentioned. He's
going to be the chief of operations, and she knows Pete Hammond from Annapolis.
Right. He was the head of the Health and Government Operations Committee in Annapolis, and really one of the most respected committee chairs down there. Extremely smart, considered impeccably fair. You know, that's a great kind of person to have in that role. You know, he's a mild-mannered guy, but, you know, very sharp. And then to have, you know, Jim Smith's experience will be really fascinating to see.
Yeah, Jim Smith, the former Baltimore County executive, a former judge, and the former transportation secretary in the O'Malley.
And so he seems to have sort of a consigliere kind of role in this administration. And, you know, I think he's a person who can certainly tell her this is going to fly, this is not going to fly, because, you know, he's been in that position before. He tried to do some controversial things in terms of neighborhood redevelopment in areas of Baltimore County that had felt left out, you know, Dundalk, Randallstown, places like that, places that are not always easy to deal with politically. So I think he may, you know, it'll be interesting to see kind of how his perspective merges into the Baltimore City context.
The other is Karen Stokes. She's the director of government relations. She will be the primary lobbyist between the mayor and the city council. She comes from Philadelphia. So interesting, and not a local person. Do we know much about Karen Stokes?
Yeah, I'm afraid I don't.
Yeah. So she's an unknown. And then, of course, her director of communications, which is the fifth person that she announced, is Anthony McCarthy, who was director of communications for Sheila Dixon, for Stephanie Rawlings Blake, was Catherine Pugh's campaign communications coordinator, and will now then serve as her communications director in office. You know, Bishop Miles, what's your take on Anthony? I mean, you've known him for a long time, I would imagine. I mean, he's had a show, and he might even still have a show on WEAA radio. He's certainly a longtime player on the scene. Is he going to be a person that can effectively communicate the new mayor's agenda?
We'll see. The jury's out on that. I think when you serve in too many administrations, one can then start to question your loyalty as to where your real loyalty is.
Although I can say certainly from a press perspective, he's a pro.
Yeah, he's a pro.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's a pro.
Yeah, he's very responsive and stuff. You know, and that's, you know, that's always good from our point of view. Here's an email from Sandy who says, I think Stephanie Rawlings Blake was an excellent mayor. People forget that she didn't choose to be mayor. She has done wonders with the city's finances amid fierce opposition and has made progress with a number of structural issues that will benefit the city in the long run. In my opinion, Catherine Pugh will be an excellent mayor, but she's very fortunate to inherit the position after Mary Rawlings Blake laid the groundwork for fiscal soundness, which in the end is the only thing that will allow the city to go forward and be a place for every community to be safe and solvent. So there's a fan of SRB. You know, Gene, when Stephanie Rawlings Blake, for example, Andy alluded to the pension debate that was taking place and a part of the pension agreement that was signed in the Schaefer administration that Stephanie Rawlings Blake reversed, it strikes me that she did that at the beginning of her tenure. And at the beginning when she wasn't, in fact, elected. She had been elected the city council president.
Right.
And then she became the mayor and then got reelected and got elected for the first official time in 2011 by a victory margin, by the way, of 87%. So she was popular at the time. But she took on, I mean, there were billboards that the unions had posted bashing her for, in their opinion, destroying her pension. I mean, there is a little political bravery going on here at this point, isn't there?
Yeah, and, you know, as we talked about earlier, she did come into office wanting to be this great financial steward of the city and wanting, you know, things to run well. But even by that standard, I think she might have fallen short. I mean, I was looking at some of our early coverage of her tenure, and there were some issues that I'd totally forgotten about, like the water bill crisis. You know, people were starting to get bills in the five and six figures, and some empty buildings were getting charged. And so that was, you know, for someone who came into office as like a managerial type of mayor.
It did take a long time to get that.
Yeah. And, you know, the water rates were going up and yet you couldn't trust your bill. And I think that has an impact. Even now with our monthly billing, I look at it and I have like no confidence in my water bill, you know, whether it's accurate or not. And then there was
Catherine Pugh has a water bill crisis of her own. And it's rooted in the fact that the water is a whole lot more expensive than it used to be.
Yeah.
But you're right. The confidence about whether they're even billing us correctly from right. month to month, you know, it's there.
And, you know, the city's infrastructure is, as it's been for years, is failing, and water mains
which is
are
why the water bills are going up.
Place. Yeah. So I think, you know, it's a challenging city. And if you're going to, you know, it's even just daily life is challenging, you know, so there's traffic, there are water mains exploding all over the place. It's there's a lot to do.
Jean Marbell is an investigative reporter for the Baltimore Sun. Bishop Douglas Miles is the co-chair emeritus of Build and the pastor of Koinonia Baptist Church. And Andy Green edits the opinion page at the Sun. It's Midday on the Mayors. You can join us when we come back from a quick break. 410-662-8780, midday at WIPR.org. And that's our email address and our Twitter handle, at Midday Tom Hall. Having said that, it will not surprise you to find you are listening to Midday, and I am indeed Tom Hall. I hope you will stick around for 90 seconds.
This is your NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. It's Midday here on 88.1 WYPR. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, we're talking about what it takes to be an effective mayor in Baltimore. Catherine Pugh's inauguration as the new mayor began a couple of hours ago and ended within the last half hour. She will face a number of challenges, and inevitably, she will be compared to the 49 mayors who preceded her, including her friend Stephanie Rawlings Blake. I'm joined here in Studio A with three folks whose collective erudition about Charm City is staggering. Andy Green is the opinion editor for the Baltimore Sun. Bishop Douglas Miles is a lifelong resident of our city and co-chair emeritus of Baltimoreans United in Leadership Development and the pastor at Koinonia Baptist Church. Jean Marbella is a reporter on the Baltimore Sun's investigative and enterprise team. She's a former national correspondent, an editor, and a columnist. You are welcome to give us a call and join our discussion about the mayors, the new one and the old one. 410-662-8780 is our phone number here at Midday. Our email, midday@wipr.org. And if you want to drop us a tweet, you can find us at Midday Tom Hall. I want to play a clip from an interview that I did with former Mayor Stephanie Rawlings Blake in August. This was during the time that the Port Covington negotiations with Build, the organization that you've been so closely associated with, Bishop Miles, were taking place. And I was interested and struck by her tone when she talked about how that was going and what she perceived the outcome would be.
None of this development happens in challenged communities without public support. There's no place, there are many places around the country that will build infrastructure and hope that development will come. Baltimore is not one of those places. And if we think that we're going to get the type of transformational development that I want to see in Baltimore without using all of the tools in our toolbox, we're fooling ourselves. This is a project that has been vetted. This is a project that will bring jobs and resources and opportunity. And I'm proud of the work of the South Baltimore Six that came together, that took a look at this project, that said this is going to be a benefit to Baltimore, and it's going to be a benefit to our community. And it's going to be so not because the ACLU negotiated a deal for us or Build negotiated a deal for us, but because those communities who were directly impacted by Port Covington came to the table in their own name and with their own priorities and agenda and sat at the table and got their needs met. And I'm extremely proud of the way that those communities stepped up to the plate and developed a negotiated an agreement that will provide job opportunities and community development for decades to come.
So, Bishop Miles, I was speaking to the then Mayor Rawlings Blake in August on the morning show that I used to host, and it was striking to me how sort of dismissive she was of Build and the other organizations that came to town. She alighted upon the neighborhoods, you know, Cherry Hill and the South Baltimore Six. But of course, Build and others made the point that the TIF was being provided by the entire city, not just those six neighborhoods. But she was somewhat dismissive of the efforts that Bill did, and now, in the light of day, having, you know, gone through that process, almost everybody thinks that this was an historic agreement. I mean, Kevin Plank's company, Sagamore Development, committed to something around $120, $130 million to do things like job training and affordable housing and job wage guarantees for the people who are going to be building this colossal new place. What did you make at the time, and what do you make now, kind of as you think back of it, of the mayor's opportunity there to lead in the Port Covington discussion?
Well, I mean, that's just filled with so much. Number one, unfortunately, the former mayor never learned the basic rule of politics. No permanent enemies, no permanent allies, just permanent self-interest. Now, she was dismissing a group in terms of Bill that helped her tremendously to win the bottle tax, that spearheaded the effort to save school funding down in Annapolis on at least two different occasions. But because we had some disagreement centered around our program Turnaround Tuesday, she turned against us. And she never forgot that. She never forgot a bad meeting that happened over at Memorial Baptist Church on a Tuesday evening, in fact. And that's unfortunate. And where she should have been the one championing a citywide agreement that brought real benefits to the city, again, she was AWOL, absent without leave. And so that left a vacuum. And where there's a vacuum, somebody will fill it. And the Build organization said, this is a vacuum we had to get into, and we had to impact this process for the sake of the city.
And if I might add in, as someone who's not wasn't directly involved in all of this, it's not as if there was tension between Build and the South Baltimore Six. You know, the two were working together, and you know, in fact, they and Sagamore all came and talked to us at the editorial board after the fact. You know, all together, kumbaya and everything. You know, I'd say this speaks a little bit more to one of the unfortunate aspects of Mayor Rawlings-Blake's personality sometimes, that she could be very dismissive of things that, ideas that weren't hers, processes she did not lead, and defensive of, the clip there, well, this deal has been vetted, that sort of dismissive of criticism of anything her administration had done. And I don't think it served her well.
Yeah. I mean, the impression is that she was ready to sign the deal that was offered to her by Sagamore.
Yeah. Without any concessions to the neighborhood.
Conversation.
Even Sagamore, if you talk to them, said, well, we never thought that was going to be the deal.
They were kind of set up by her to be attacked.
Yeah.
By the city not asking Sagamore for anything of any substance. And that's unfortunate.
But Gene Marbella, I mean, the other person that people have accused of being AWOL during that process was the putative mayor, Catherine Pugh, who won the primary in April, and everybody just assumed she would be elected in November. But she was quiet as a mouse about Port Covington, wasn't she?
Yeah, and I guess, out of respect for the sitting mayor, I don't think she could have a public role. I don't know if anything was going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, I mean, I actually had a conversation with her about this, saying, I think you need to get out there and tell people what you think. But she was very reluctant to look like she was stepping on.
She always said one mayor at a time.
Yeah.
Right.
Which, on the one hand, I understand. On the other hand, let's get real.
And it'll be interesting to see what happens. There's been a lot of talk of what happens to the housing commissioner, Graziano.
The mayoral candidates, even before the primary, vowed to get rid of him.
Right, right. Yeah. And what happens with outstanding issues like, according to the legislature, each local jurisdiction gets to say who's on the police review board. And so she hasn't said, publicly, oh, yeah, definitely we're going to have civilians, mm-hmm. When I come into office.
Yeah, although I would also like to go back to a point Bishop Miles raised early on. The real clock-ticking thing for her to do is this consent decree with the feds over the police department, because January 20th, when Donald Trump is inaugurated and Senator Jeff Sessions becomes head of the Justice Department, this is a guy who explicitly has said he does not believe in this kind of consent decree. So if you can somehow get this before a judge before then, the courts can enforce it. If you wait until after the Trump administration takes over, who knows? And if this consent decree falls apart, I think that's a major betrayal of the people of Baltimore.
I mean, we of course are not privy to the backroom wheeling and dealing about the consent decree, but is this another failing of the Rawlings-Blake administration to not get it done? You'd think, you know, if I were the mayor, the former mayor, I would think, well, you know, this can be part of my legacy. I mean, this can be part of proof positive that I had a positive effect on this terrible thing that happened under my watch. I mean, do we have any notion as to why it's not done yet? They've missed their own self-imposed deadline.
In any public issue, follow the money. And the consent decree is going to cost Baltimore money. So on one hand, where there's one camp that wants to see it implemented, there's perhaps another camp that may be kind of hoping that it won't be, because it's going to cost the city of Baltimore big dollars.
Right. And I mean, what's frustrating here is that there are negotiations being done on our behalf, and we don't know what they're negotiating. You know, as Bishop Miles says, yes, it's going to cost money, and this is something that the people of Baltimore need to be prepared for. But it would be nice if we had a concept of what we're talking about here, what other sacrifices that might require, so that we can have an informed opinion about whether we support what is being done on our behalf.
It's really quite striking how when the report from the Department of Justice came out in the summer, it was devastating. It was incriminating, you know, times 12. And at that point, they said, well, there's going to be a consent decree, and consent decrees have been put in place in a bunch of other cities, and this is what's happened. And they've generally speaking, held people's feet to the fire when those feet needed to be held. Now we're even talking about the notion that there may not be a consent decree.
Yes.
I mean, that's crazy. That's just crazy.
Yeah.
And I think that would be very unfortunate for Baltimore if the consent decree does not get life and is not fully enacted. There's already that major distrust still with the police department. And there's even some anger at sitting elected African-American officials, because many in the community said, you had to know this was going on, and you never voiced it. Even when some of us voiced it, there were many in elective office who kind of said,
hush.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Why did it take someone from outside Baltimore to tell Baltimore City what's been happening on their streets for years?
One of the things that the former mayor lists in her list of accomplishment is she reported a 300% increase in tips to police in 2013. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, they must not be resulting in any homicide clearances.
I don't know what the level of tips to police and witnesses being willing to come forward in cases is now. But you know, Marilyn Mosby just got a $2.4 million grant to sort of help with that. But restoring the credibility, Gene, we've just got a couple of minutes here, or a couple of seconds rather, to finish up. Restoring credibility between the police and particularly communities of color has got to be priority number one for Catherine Pugh.
Definitely. And I think Commissioner Davis has been working really hard on that. You see him out there all the time. And I think it's going to take time.
Yeah. There are some stars of the Stephanie Rawlings-Blake administration, like Mr. Davis, who seems to be pretty well received. Lena Wen, the health commissioner, it's assumed that she would stay on. And then there's others like Paul Graziano who are probably on their way out. Well, thanks to all of you. I very much appreciate your coming out on this rainy day. And we will be in touch as we follow the developments in the new Pugh administration. Thanks so much. Bishop Douglas Miles is co-chair emeritus of Baltimore United in Leadership Development and the pastor of Koinonia Baptist Church. Jean Marbell is a reporter on the Baltimore Sun's investigative and enterprise team. She's a former national correspondent and editor and a columnist. And Andy Green is the opinion editor of the Sun. WYPR's Kenneth Burns and John Lee will have complete coverage of the inauguration of Catherine Pugh tonight during All Things Considered. That's it for us today. Tomorrow, a look at the life and music of Cole Porter with Susan Weiss. Our show will also include in-studio performances of some of Porter's classic tunes with Melissa Wimbish and Michael Joseph Harris. Hope you can join us for that. And I hope you can also join us tonight on WIPR.org or right here on the radio for Christmas with Choral Arts, a concert from the Baltimore Basilica that I'll be conducting with the Baltimore Choral Arts Society Chorus and Orchestra. Our live broadcast begins at 7:30 tonight here on 88.1. The concert is sold out from what I'm told, but you can join us here on the radio. Thanks so much for listening. We'd also like to thank Joe Squared for providing lunch for our guests today. Joe Squared serves coal-fired pizzas, risotto, and local craft beers. Locations and hours on the web at joesquared.com. midday.com. Congratulations to Mayor Pugh. I'm Tom Hall. So glad you could be with us today for Midday. Have a great day.
Here and Now is next, here on 88.1 WYPR. Then stay tuned at 3 for fresh air.
Please, please, baby, baby, come back home.
On the next Fresh Air, Dwight Yoakam. He has a new album of bluegrass versions of his country songs. Also, Maria Semple tells us about her new comic novel, Today Will Be Different, which takes place during one day of a stressed-out mother's life. Join us.
Listen for Fresh Air this afternoon at 3.